Welcome to a quick Conversations of Change podcast with Dr. Jen Fram. We have a change chat with one of the leaders in the change management field. Welcome to this week's change chat. I am very excited. We've gone across the globe again and we're back in Belgium. This week we're talking with one of the most impressive experts that I've met around the space of dialogue, and that would be Jeffa London. Welcome, Jeffa, to our change chat.
Hello, good to be with you.
Yeah, that's great. So for those who haven't thought much about dialogue and conversations, Jeff has been working as a change practitioner for years now. And as I understand it, your work is now more focused on engagement through conversations. And you've got some exciting stuff happening. So, you know, after a number of years working on dialogue experiments, you're now channeling that all into a project called Stimulating Conversations. I think one of the areas that we've really connected over is the notion that we probably both see organizational change as a series of connected and sometimes random conversations. And I thought that would be interesting to explore. I mentioned that you're working on dialogue experiments. Can we start with what is a dialogue experiment? What do you mean by that, Jeffa?
Exactly. So, I mean, I guess the background is I started in formal change management, the large technology implementations, and some worked well and some didn't work well. But what I realized was that when the discussions and the dialogue was present, things were better. People were more engaged. Mm-hmm. People understood what was really happening. And that started the origin of the experiment was, how do you make that happen? Some conversations, when we're in a good conversation, we know it. It feels right and the eyes are glittering and people lean in and it feels positive. At the other side, we know sometimes we just give up. It's just like, this conversation's not going anywhere. Let's just stop now. Or it feels contrived or manipulated and it just feels wrong somewhere. Mm. So why is that? That's really was the investigation. So we started bringing groups together, I guess about 5 years ago, more formally, to look at, okay, let's discuss a topic. And then at the end, we asked a few questions. What helped this conversation get better? What got in the way? And what have we learned about conversation through this conversation? So very simple questions, mm-hmm. but the results were surprising. I mean, on the one hand, we all know how to have a good conversation. On the other hand, we all seem to feel like we don't have as many as we'd like to have.
Mm. What then, I guess, begs the question, what are the hallmarks of a good conversation?
I think it's the energy, you know, where something is, something new is emerging out of it. So it comes, usually there's some area, some territory that's being explored that you couldn't really explore in the same way by yourself. We can have a conversation by ourselves, but when we're thrown together with people who are different, who see things differently, we can have insights that we just can't get by ourselves. So there's a personal satisfaction in it, mm-hmm. A sense of progress, a sense of understanding, a little bit like storytelling. I mean, conversations help us understand who we are, how to make sense of the world.
And where do you see the role of conversation in change? I guess probably, you know, differentiating between formal conversations and informal conversations. How does that play out for you in change?
Well, I think when we want, you know, whether you're changing ourselves, a team, an organization, a community, we tend to have the same questions that come up over and over again. But to really, I don't know, for most of the change projects I feel like I have a lot of the same conversations or the same kind of roadshow type of conversations over and over again, talking about the same topics, different communities as you go around. But I think it's quite important. And for me, what's behind that is the intention. Mm-hmm. And we know that from a lot of the formal studies about change projects that work or don't, that we need to be crystal clear on what's the purpose of this project? Where do we really want to go? What's the intention? And that comes up in the conversation. I think people have an intuitive sense of he's just, you know, they're just talking, but they don't really mean it, or they really have the intention of a change. And, you know, I think most of us think our changes are positive changes. It's the other people sometimes to say, that doesn't sound very positive to me.
And I guess one of the things that I found in my thesis back when I did my PhD was I was really interested in the notion that our conversations create the change we want to see and shape the change, as opposed to being a vehicle. You know, a conversation can be instrumental in that you use it to achieve an outcome, or a conversation can be generative in that you come in without preconceived ideas. Do you see that playing out with your dialogue experiments?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think when people come in with where they feel they already know what the outcome is before, we're just going through the motions, and it really feels flat and hollow. There are people who can pretend quite well. But when you have the real sparks, you know, when you see the sparkle in people's eyes, and things are also we get put off balance and are able to explore other people's view, the other side, I don't think it can really be faked. I mean, I think it has to, but for that, you need a genuine question that is kind of almost unanswerable, or no one in the group really knows the answer to it. So that's, for me, that's really was one of the most important things that's come out of the experiments, was how to get to that question. And that can be the first conversation, is what are the questions we're facing. But when you have a question that is opened up, you know, kind of goes to the root of the question, root of the issues going on, and gets people excited, and like, I'm curious. That's really the secret.
How do you keep conversations open and flowing? I mean, this can be one of the challenges, really, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, the context of most of these dialogue events are like a strategic retreat. We bring top teams, project teams, groups who have a common interest or common challenge together, usually off-site somewhere out in the wilderness, or where they're a little bit isolated from the rest of the world. And if you're doing that all day or for 2 days straight, of course it can be a little bit, you know, too cerebral, too much, too much talking. So we usually will do it in short doses. And you know, people, I guess, on the line are familiar with things like World Cafe, and those principles definitely come up in the sense of, let's talk for 20 minutes, then do something else, get some air, come back and see what we've learned, and then enter it again. So last week we were with a group and we decided, okay, we've talked all morning. Let's take a break. We get in pairs. We go for walks in the countryside and digest a little bit one-on-one, what's happened, and then we come back and share the insights. And it was hugely positive. I think people, we all need a mix of, you know, there's the confrontation, but there's also time for reflection. And I think it's too much to ask most people to, you know, to talk nonstop for hours, days.
It begs the question, I guess, what role is silence? How do we deal with silence in conversations? Have your experiments revealed much around either the power of silence or the discomfort of silence?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've all had that, you know, especially like on the phone where, you know, we don't know what's happening on the other end. It's the most difficult. But I think what we try to do is also have space, like the walk and talk model where we go out in the nature is very good, because it's not seen as silence, because you're absorbing the sounds and sights of the nature. And you're walking. It's like when you do, people have done a pilgrimage. The word pilgrimage means to pray with your feet. Mm-hmm. And it's really the action more than the reflection. But things happen in the action. So even if you're in a room with people and you have pens and paper on the table and you're doodling, just like when you scribble notes on the telephone, a lot happens, a lot is being processed. So I think just most people, I think I've had trouble just staring into the space thinking, okay, we're being silent now, let's meditate. It doesn't work for me at all. I can't do it. But the, you know, give me some markers and a thing, or let me look at the leaves changing color. And then that silence becomes actually much more useful and meaningful. So I think it's not to shy away from, it's to incorporate in the programs, even when you're, if you think about like managing a big change initiative,
yep,
having space for quiet reflection on things. I mean, these right. things are changing people's lives. Of course, they want to think about it a little bit. They don't want to just, they need space. And I think yeah. they're not, you know, who has enough time in the day? Nobody.
Yeah. So, that's part of our role. It's such a good point. Like, it's one of those things that's so obvious. And then when you say it out loud, it's like, yeah, right. There's no space for processing. And that is the power of silence. And I guess the other thing that was crossing my mind when you were saying that, I was thinking about that notion of extroverts who need to speak to think, as opposed to introverts who need the silence and need to have their thinking internally before they can speak. Again, do you see yeah. a difference with your dialogue experiments between people who are yeah. extrovert and introverted?
Exactly. Next week we do a group with, it's mostly medical professionals, doctors, academics, really thinking people, very big brain power. And what's become important for this group was we're actually doing a lot of interviews before on what are the questions they're facing and really shaping all those questions before we get there so they have time to think about it. So they come with their viewpoints and then we'll have a mixture of some not really debate, but the idea is what you said, like a generative conversation, mm-hmm. but in the format, it's going to be a little bit where we break into groups and they both groups kind of have a competition of who can generate the best ideas. Mm-hmm. But because they are, you know, 95% reflective, introverted, deep experts, deep kind of people with deep technology, deep skills, they want time to think about it in advance. Mm-hmm. And even on the day, we try to put enough air in the program where they can also interact in their own way.
Nice. What out of the work that you've done, and obviously, you know, that's been with thousands of people, what are the markers of a good conversationalist? What makes somebody a good conversationalist?
Yeah, I think that's, when we started the study, that was actually the first hypothesis, because we're now pouring all the insights into a book. And the first yeah. one was basically called The Conversationalist. So we had, you know, like the participants, people who are good listening, people who are good talkers, people who can be the good provocative, the challenger. Then you have others like this, I would say the conversation specialist. They're really good at getting the question right, or they're just super curious and they have a lot of empathy to pull things out of other people. Mm-hmm. You have others who are really the meaning maker, like, okay, we're having a conversation, but there's something bigger. They're able to kind of like be in the conversation, but also be the bird flying over the conversation to see what's happening and give more profound statements about it. Mm-hmm. And then there's people, I think, like us, right? So, like hosting conversations, facilitating conversations, writing about conversations. So it's more like the professionals. So that was like the premise of the book, was let's look at those different profiles. And if you could master any of those profiles, you'd be a better conversationalist. Mm-hmm. But I personally think that we've moved away from that to more very universal skills, asking good questions, listening, having empathy, being present for each other, being open with the discomfort of hearing views that are different than your own. Mm. These are really what's becoming important. And if we look at what's happening in society now, where things are so polarized and, you know, people are, this is really why I've chose to kind of look at this part of life right now, because I think it's kind of, things are not going in a positive direction and you can be stuck in some change project in the end of the world where, you know, you feel like people are not talking to each other and that's terrible. But we can also look at the political landscape and say, from the left to the right, or the rich to the poor, there's not any interaction. People are just basically denying to be in contact with each other. Mm. And that's, yeah, I think that, I mean, that's really, for me, that's driving this very idealistic project that we can make the world better through better conversation.
Well, thank goodness for that, I say. So for the listeners listening at the moment, at the time of recording this, Jeffa has woken up to the US election results and I've been watching them all day. So I think, yeah. Jeffa, can you actually go back through those five, I think there are five or six universal qualities of a good conversationalist, just recap them, because I think they're really, really important at the moment, and never more so.
And we can try something, Jen, maybe even like recapping them in the context of a Trump-Clinton debacle of presidential elections. I mean, so first it's listening, right? Mm-hmm. So who, if we look at the political things, who's really listening? There's a lot of barking, there's a lot of talking, there's a lot of dumbing down of information, but it seems like people don't, at least the politicians are not really, they're not listening to each other. And so no wonder we don't have a lot of conversation.
Yeah.
One of the qualities, of course, like, so my partner is a hugely talkative person. She's a great conversationalist. Myself, mm-hmm. I'm more introvert. I think this is also part of the problem, maybe why I do the project, to understand my own home life. But the, you know, being a good talker, of course, helps. It opens up. It opens up the conversation, but does it, you know, someone who talks too much can be too dominant and not really, you know, it's more about their voice than a conversation. Mm-hmm. So we've got the listener, the talker, the challenger, so the provocateur, somebody who can, maybe it's through the way they ask a question or they challenge the status quo, but this often shakes up a conversation in a very positive way. Like, it's a question of balance. If you just go around shaking everyone up all the time, nobody really wants to be too much in conversation with you all the time. So there's a limit to it. But I think it's important. Otherwise, it can be kind of just talking about the weather and, you know, just too flat the whole time. Mm-hmm.
And I think there was that piece about empathy, you know, the empathy as well, and seeking to understand other people, because I just, you know, there's so much fragmentation at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, it really comes to listening to the other and the sense of making meaning, meaning for ourselves, meaning for the other, whether you're kind of in a more coaching situation where you're trying to help someone else figure something out, holding up the mirror to them on what's the situation, but also meaning making, or as a team, what are we going through? Why is that important? Where are we going in the future? How are we going to get there? And making sense of the context that they're in. I think in a change context, this becomes kind of an extra layer of importance. I think, you know, we may have a good conversation at the supermarket, but when we're really talking about the projects that are shaping our lives, most of us want to make a difference. And what's the meaningful difference that we make? So I think, and that can come out of a good conversation. Mm. So we've got listening, talking well, challenging, questioning, being curious, investigating, making meaning. These are really, the kind of core role. And I think the added level for maybe change practitioners and people who are professionally hosting conversations is giving visibility to the ideas. So the harvesting of ideas, the writing down of ideas, it's not just a conversation that's going to evaporate in the air, but we're putting our thoughts to paper, we're making that into an article or a video or something that lasts beyond, because generally these are things that weave in and weave out over time. So you have a conversation on Monday, some results, a different conversation on Tuesday, some results, the conversation on three. So it's actually, it builds up, and that there's some living trace of it. I think sometimes we have that precious conversation that changes our lives, but can you remember everything that happened? Usually there's like one big clash, and that's the thing that really things, but for groups and organizations, the memory is quite important. And I think that's part of our role, is to be clever in the way of capturing. I mean, I think there's a lot of, we see a lot of graphic facilitation and people able to illustrate things as they're doing. Not everyone has those kind of skill, but it does, it seems to really show the rise of that. I think shows that people want it to be more than just a, some words that float off into the air.
Well, it's kind of like creating conversational artifacts, if you will, you know.
Yeah, I like that, yeah.
Which is quite a powerful thing to do. Now, speaking about powerful conversational artifacts, as a way to wrap this up, do you want to tell the listeners about stimulating conversations, what you're building there and what they can expect to see in the future from that?
Yeah, exactly. And this is an open invitation. If you have a group of people who you feel need to talk about something and you think something special could happen there, I'm basically make my time available to help either facilitate those discussions around the world or give you a set of tools that help you to do that. And the big set of tools is right now it's a book that is being designed. It's called Stimulating Conversation. And it looks at the different elements of that. So maybe I'll just take a word from the preface here of the main aspects, but it's how to create a space for conversation, how to instill more desire, get in touch with our intention for conversation. What are the good questions? How do we shape the questions of conversation? How do we see the possibility of conversation? Maybe you're in a stagnant project or a point of life where things you just don't see the point of it, so like envisaging that it can be better. For groups, the invitation is very important, so there's a set of tools there around shaping that, and we've looked at like how advertising companies and PR companies do that. I mean, people who are very good at communicating a message and getting people on board. Then tips on flexibility, how do you stay open for a conversation at any time, at any place. And there's a lot of online tools for the design. This is an area that is maybe the biggest kind of section of tools and tips. It's simple designs like divergent and convergent conversations, mm-hmm. Some classics like using something like the GROW model or any of the Six Sigma, all these kind of process design systems, but using that for conversations in groups. So having a conversation at kind of phase one, phase two, phase three.
Sounds fantastic. So I'm going to put links to all of that on the show notes so that listeners want to follow that up. Where else, how else can they reach them? Jeff, or LinkedIn, Twitter, what's your preferred way to start a conversation?
Exactly. So probably LinkedIn is the easiest, and the Twitter hashtag stimulating conversation, you'll see a lot of visuals of that. And I'm active in most of the different forums, whether it's the facilitation groups or the art of hosting. You'll see my work there as well.
Sounds fantastic. Jeff of London, absolute pleasure to have you on today's Change Chat.
It's a pleasure to be here. Always, I mean, Jen, that's really why I'm here, for the conversation with you. It's great. Thank you for your questions.
If you enjoyed this Change Chat, then do share with your colleagues and friends. You can find more at conversationsofchange.com.au, at Jen Fram on Twitter, or Conversations of Change on the Facebook.